This is Maddie.
And this is Coco.
And this is Spill the Mead,
a history gossip podcast.
Bloop. Bitch, the pot, the tea is hot and spooky, kind of.
Kind of spooky.
We're dipping our little piggies. Little piggy spooky dipping.
Little spooky dipping.
Spooky dipping, you know how it is. This is going to be, okay, September counts.
September totally counts.
It counts.
That first leaf turns color and yeah. I'm like, yes, it's fall now.
The palette of September is reds, oranges, browns.
100%. There's pumpkins already everywhere.
So yeah, fuck off. It's spooky season. So this is a good little segue. After this, I'm going to do Marie Laveau.
Okay, that's perfect.
Or something with her. She's like the most like requested person.
Oh,
like,
really?
Over the years. Yeah, so it's time. This is the year.
You got to give the people what they want.
So this one is going to be a little like survey.
Okay.
It's not just one thing. This one we're going to talk about like a brief little history of three different things that have like a mystical kind of spooky aspect. Again,
okay. I love that.
Not full blown haunt, but like just a piggy, spooky piggy dipping. Today we're going to talk about the history of tarot.
Okay.
Tea leaf reading and palmistry.
I'm very into all of this.
Just like a little like basic witch 101. So all of this is very like, we don't really know a lot.
Okay.
So get ready for that.
Okay.
But it's still, that adds to it.
It really does add to it. Because then you can draw your own conclusions.
Exactly. So we're going to start with tarot. This is like the most cryptic one.
Okay.
Like there is very little out there about like the ancient origins of tarot. It's not really known who created tarot cards necessarily. But the tarot cards today as we know them, like what we would recognize as a tarot deck, were born in the Middle Ages for the most part. People out there, scholars out there, some of them say that they could be a direct source from the hieroglyphics from the Book of Thoth.
Okay.
That is a collection of 42 mythical and prophetic volumes in Egyptian history.
You know, variables. I love that.
I know you love
it. I love it.
I know you love it. Some people will be like, nope, tarot cards directly taken from that.
Okay.
And they aren't really wrong. There's, you know, like you could say that. We don't know. And that would make sense. Egyptians, very spiritual, all of that,
yes.
You know. However, there's also a lot of similarities between tarot decks as we would recognize them today and the 64 Chinese hexagrams that are contained in the first Qing, which is a work of ancient Chinese wisdom that's like been around for more than 3,000 years.
Oh, my older brother actually has a book on it that he's read cover to cover several times. And
oh
if you
God.
come to my house at Christmas time,
okay.
And he will do your fortune reading.
That is the coolest shit.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this first Book of Qing. He just has it.
Yeah. Come to Coco's house.
The Coco Christmas.
A Coco Christmas with Coco.
Brother, the big brother Coco. It's similar to tarot, apparently. Some scholars out there say that that could have been like the embryonic stages.
Okay.
Now, speaking of the first Qing, Chinese hexagrams and all of that, the earliest references to playing cards themselves do date back to Chinese literature. Like we see that in the 10th century playing cards, like the history of playing cards is very heavily linked to Chinese history.
I didn't know that. That's super cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were called playing cards or dominoes.
Oh, okay.
Those were like interchangeable words. We don't know what kinds of markings were on these cards or like what types of games they were playing with
right.
them, but like playing card type items are known to come from China. So it would make sense if like the whole tarot card spread maybe did come from these hexagrams.
That does make sense to me.
Who knows? So starting in the 1200s, tarot cards began to spread throughout the courts.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Like the different royal courts.
Royal courts, yes. So from around like 1200 to 1500, we know from contemporary documents at the time that tarot cards were like circulated throughout Europe. So again, we don't exactly know where these started, where they came from, who invented them per se, who were the first people to come up with right. these. We don't even necessarily know where the word tarot derived from.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of different explanations that are attributed to the following language. We have Egyptian, Indo-Tartar, Hebrew, Latin, some Taoist and Chinese. Like, just there's similar words that could wow. pertain to this. It's just so mysterious.
Obscure, yeah.
So obscure. So it's believed that in the 14th century, it's pronunciation here, Mamluk.
Something to that effect.
Those types of game cards were brought from Turkey into Western Europe.
Okay.
And this is a type of playing card. These were the ones that were first linked to not just like cards to play games with, but like divination.
Okay.
You know, some sort of mysticism behind these cards. Like, these cards tell a story. There's something more there than just games. Yes.
Yeah, this is so interesting.
Even later in the 1500s, this is where it really kind of pops off. Historically, like, when we look at the oldest deck of tarot cards, like, in existence right now, what country would they come
yeah.
from? Like, thinking so hard about what it would be. And they come from Italy.
Italy.
Those are the oldest ones. The Italians in the 1500s played a game called Tarocchi Appropriati.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Thank you. And what that was pretty much like dealing out cards that had like thematic associations with them to like tell stories about each other.
Okay.
So think of it kind of like MASH. Back in the day,
okay.
like, you know, like your mansion apartment, like all of that, like just a fun little game, like pick a number, you know, like you'd shuffle your cards and lay them out, you know, okay. and it would tell stories about people in the room.
Yes.
Kind of things, just like a fun little.
The way that I am supposed to be living in a mansion married to Jonathan Taylor Thomas, mm-hmm. and I don't know what
with
happened.
30 kids.
With, yeah.
Did you set your intention?
I didn't set my intention. What? Maybe it's still in my future.
Well,
only MASH knows.
Only MASH knows. Only MASH knows. So that was kind of what they were doing back then. It's fun. It's fun, right?
Yeah.
So the wealthy families in Italy kind of like took it up a notch, and they started hiring artists in the area to like design special cards. Like,
yeah.
Like as members of their family, or we'll see here, there were a lot of people, if you're into certain types of mythology, they would have decks like okay. around that, and so you would kind of work with artists.
That makes so much sense to me, because the Italian culture, that's such a big thing. They love to hire an artist for something.
Love to hire an artist.
Paint me a fresco.
They would have these like expensive tarot card decks, right? Then they were called carte de triomphe, cards of triumph. And so again, like there's a lot of different kinds of cards, a lot of different kinds of designs, and the images were supposed to mirror aspects of the world around them. So there'd be different family members, there'd be different situations,
okay.
there would be different things going on. You shuffle them, you lay them out, and you would see which cards would like triumph over other ones, essentially.
Oh, that's
that
really cool.
Thing. Yeah. And so during this period, we have a firsthand example of this. One Filippo Maria Visconti, the Duke of Milan. Now, he wanted a son real bad. Tis the times back then.
Tis men.
Yep. And he decides to do the logical thing at this time and commission a fucking tarot deck. Yeah.
Because you gotta make art.
The artists are working back then. And
they
that's
are
beautiful.
Working.
And they would like be selective about their artists and their art style. You know, like they would pick them out and be like, I want you to design this deck of like
that
these past
so
time
fun.
Cards, you know? Yeah, like it's cool. So this guy, the Duke of Milan, commissioned a deck that were linked to like Greek deities of the pantheon.
Okay,
and
yeah.
So he had all of these cards designed and they predicted whatever, you know, and this child arrived and it was a girl.
Oh.
And they named that girl Bianca Maria Visconti. And this, like, her birth over time also, like, changed the symbolism and, like, the deck of the cards, too. Like, it kind of evolved because it was this family. And
yeah.
this was happening to this family, right?
Yeah.
So this deck, or parts of it, still survives today. And this is the oldest surviving tarot
deck. That's very cool.
So this is called the Visconti Sforza Tarot deck. I love that because in the Idaho Rim Fair, my character character is Bianca Maria Sforza. So crazy. I never like knew this.
That is so crazy.
So the Visconti Sforza tarot deck is used to collectively refer to incomplete sets of approximately like 15-ish decks that are just fucking floating. This is a big family. They've got like a lot of, you know, stuff going on. So like approximately 15 decks incomplete, different kind of cards floating around out in the ether to this day. So they're in museums, libraries, private collections, just out there. They're gorgeous. They're richly embellished. They're, you know, they're like trying to show off their status and all of that.
Yeah,
and
so it's a flex
They're beautiful. I'll post photos. Like, they're beautiful. They're tarot cards. And so it was like through these cards like this coming out of these Italian courts, that the tarot card was then kind of transformed into like a divination tool, right?
Okay.
So like picture it, you know, it could have been something like you're sitting there, you're dealing out these cards saying like this, that, and the other is going to happen, you know, like to so-and-so, but like, what if something does?
Right.
And so then people are like, oh my gosh, like every time Madame Coco pulls a card, like, no, it's not Madame. What is it? Every time Signora, is that it? What's Italian?
I don't fucking know.
Yeah, so like maybe one person who's like laying these cards out, like things start to happen a little bit. From the pastimes of wealthy Italian families, then the tarot card was more transformed into a divination tool.
Okay.
Like that is what we are using this for.
Yeah.
Like we're taking it up a notch. We're not like playing this. Like this is not MASH. We're doing this for real.
The cards never told me I'll marry JTT.
No. The little like Italian version, like JTT. I love it.
Jonathanio.
God, it's too hard. Yeah. It's like the most American fucking name. You have three names. They're all so American. Like, way to go. So in the 1700s, this is when the 22 major arcana kind of start showing up. And they start standing out as the cards in the deck that are showing this path that humanity would have to follow to achieve enlightenment.
Right.
These cards are telling a story. And that sticks around today. Today, the major arcana is looked at in tarot as this way for us to look forward our lives, you know, and like reach awareness of ourselves and like face your darkest fears. And you know, when you like pull that tower card and shit,
you know,
and you're like,
fucked.
Oh no, you know, yeah, you're either like, yep, that tracks, or you're like, oh shit,
I'm in for it.
It's one of those things. Even back then, people were kind of catching on. So it goes back to like you're playing those parlor games, but like some people are good at this. Like some people are pulling things. Some people like put that intuition, that thought, that intent into it. And that's the art of what makes a good tarot reader. Even back then was, you know, you have to like, you're helping increase people's self-esteem. You're saying like, the universe says this is happening. It's going to happen. This happened, whatever it was. And you're like making the people aware of it without like increasing dependency, right? I'm like giving you the tools, you know, of what this is. Like, I'm not saying these cards are me talking to God or something. Like, it's none of that.
Yeah.
Like, this is just if the shoe fits kind of thing. Like,
well, and that's so interesting too, because the cards didn't start out as divination tools, but you had to have people telling stories about the cards, and then the common stories just became the lore of the cards.
Right.
And now our cards decks come with little books that tell you what that lore is.
Mm-hmm.
But back then they were all just like making it up, and then it just stuck.
Right. Even today, and I have the book.
Yeah.
Mine are actually like printed like right on my cards.
Oh,
I love
nice.
It. The cards that I use to like do like readings for other people and that kind of thing. If you're ever on my Instagram lives when I do tarot readings, that's the deck that I use for those, because it's nice and quick, good for like that daily pull kind of thing. I'm one of those that like reads off the cards. However, I will say I've had tarot readings both ways. I've had it with like aids like that,
mm-hmm.
either on the cards or a book or something like that. And I've had tarot readings with readers that just look at those fucking cards and look at you and feel everything around and like look at the symbols on the card and like just read it. And there is something that hits different about that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's personality.
Right. There weren't like a ton of those books floating around. Like this was still very reader to reader.
Yeah.
You know, like the decks that you have kind of thing.
So you're telling a story. You're kind of embellishing.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were telling me, but you knew me a little bit,
you
could tell my story.
And yeah. And you can like lean into it, you know, especially if you're like just doing this for fun with your family and like, you know, that your sister has a crush on whoever kind of thing. And like you like draw that card or something, like, you know, but when you're good at it. and you have that, you know, some people, like, you just got it. So it was back in the 1700s when those first booklets and stuff started coming out, okay. Right? Before that, again, it was games like MASH. It was other games like Bridge, like modern day Bridge almost. Oh. Like, you know, a game of strategy, two teams of two people type things.
Okay.
That would be using the same decks type of thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, interesting. Again, I wonder what these games were, if people were just making them up on the spot. I don't know. In the late 1700s, that is when Jean-Baptiste Alliette published the first guide to tarot reading.
Oh, very cool.
Mm-hmm, late 1700s. And then that's when, like, the widespread divination use, that's it.
It blew exploded.
Up. These are tarot cards. That brings us up to the 19th and early 20th century. That's when the very famous, all tarot readers know it, the Rider-Waite deck.
Oh, yes.
Popped on the scene. That was in 1909.
It's a basic staple. It is the recognizable tarot mm-hmm. deck. Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal in the tarot world. It, like, came on scene. Her artwork, A.E. Waite, she's so cute. I'm going to post her picture.
I've never looked her up.
So William Rider, like, had the brainchild of this, right? Like,
okay.
And he was like, it's your art. It has to be your art to do this. And so she was the one that made it very detailed and, like, very kind of standardized. A lot, pretty much everything after that was based on that Rider-Waite.
Yeah.
Deck. It really broke the mold.
Well, there are 8 bajillion tarot decks you can choose from. I was just at a store the other day that had so many.
So many.
Any different theme ever, like Bob's Burgers tarot deck.
They do. No.
They really do.
And it's just like whatever, like, speaks to you. The deck that I use is based on the Rider-Waite deck, and that's the one that I use pretty much forever. And I do have, like, a very special one mm-hmm. that is an Italian Renaissance deck. It's gold gilded and shit. And
yeah.
I never bust that one out. Again, the Rider-Waite deck, you've seen it. We'll post pictures. She uses those bold colors, like those yellows, blues, reds, and, like, she has that very distinctive artwork and that kind of.
It is distinctive.
It kind of, like, blew up from there. Now, there's, like, a lot of different ways to read tarot.
Okay.
So you have your 22 major arcana cards. And again, that is, like, telling the story of the fool, pretty much. It starts from card 0. You've got that fool. His foot is usually, like, hanging over a cliff, like, ready to step off.
Yes.
And that starts this journey. And it marks, you know, the journey to enlightenment, you know, so to speak. And from there, he goes and he meets all these people and he encounters all of these things. And overcomes all of these obstacles. You hit that death card that looks scary.
It looks scary.
But it's not. It's so good, you know? And, like, it's
transformation.
Yeah. Then you get that Wheel of Fortune, mm-hmm. which I think it's like Rody, something like that. There's another, like, could have been where the word tarot came from.
Okay.
So you have those major arcana, which symbolize these big life changes, a big turning point in your life, a big thing.
Yeah.
And you have your minor arcana, which are broken down to 4 different suits, kind of similar to the 4 card suits we have today.
Right.
But instead of spades, hearts, diamonds, and clubs, we have wands, pentacles, swords, and cups. And each of those kind of rule their own sort of thing. So each of these suits of the minor arcana represent a different element, right? So your cups are water.
Okay.
Those cards are going to deal with relationships, emotions, desires, that type of thing. Your swords, those are your air. That's your air elements.
Okay.
That's thoughts, ideas, conflict, right? So if you're pulling anything with a sword on it, you know, like, that's where the focus of the current, the person
right.
getting read. That's kind of where we're going to look. Where fire is wands, energy, spirituality, growth, you
okay.
know, like high energy, think fire signs, like
yeah.
that type of thing. And then pentacles is earth, possessions, money, career. Lot of job-based things with that.
I'm a pentacle girly.
You're a pentacle girly. I'm a cups girly. From there, your reader is going to look for patterns, look for multiples of things, try to connect it to things in your life, talk to you. Again, kind of a misconception that tarot reading is, like, supposed to tell your future, things
yeah.
like that. And if people, you know, people will go into it with that whole, like, will you tell me this? And if you, like, work together kind of thing, it can, like, help you out.
It's not MASH. It's not you're going to marry JTT.
No, no, no. now. Yeah, there's no card with Hampton Court on it that says that I'm going to go there.
No.
There's not. We do have card 35, the Mead card.
Mead card?
On some merch right now. It's available.
Hell yeah, we do. It's really pretty.
Please go check it out. Yay! Not great at that.
Shameless plug.
Shameless plug. Please, though. All right. Moving on. I was excited about this one because I don't know anything about tea leaf reading for the most part.
I don't really either. I just know that there's like tea remnants in your cup, which kind of wigs me out.
I am not a loose leaf tea drinker. I don't get it. Because like how... Like, are you just, like, just keeping a tight lip and you're just, like, letting it run into it or, like, I...
Slurping that through, like, a little mini filter? I don't know.
Right, yeah.
Or do you just not give a fuck?
Yeah.
You just drink it and it's delightful.
I don't, or
maybe there's a third possibility.
Oh, my God. Are you supposed to drink it?
I don't know.
Never occurred to me, not one time.
I have no idea. This is how much I know. I like to drink tea, but it comes in a little bag.
Yes.
Or I have a little diffuser.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the loose leaf, they go in that little diffuser and then it's not all in my cup.
It's not in your cup. Yeah. 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 God. Okay. This, what I'm about to tell you is going to shed no light on you. We're going to be just as confused as we were. So known as tassiography or tassiomancy.
Okay. That's a cool ass name.
So fucking cool. Anything that ends with like mancy.
Anything with mancy is like, good.
Mancy is so good. So the art of reading shapes left behind in the cup of loose leaf tea can go by those terms. This has been around for centuries. And, you know, this is often happening around a table, maybe like in a dimly lit tea room, that kind of thing.
Love a tea room.
We love a tea room. We love a dimly lit one for this because like mindset with all of this, with tarot, tea leaves, palms are all of it. Like
energy.
The energy has got to be there. Mindset is everything. Vibe is everything. We can't get a good reading on anything if the vibe is not there.
That's true.
So same thing as in tarot, the person seeking answers here is called the querent. And once this person finishes their drink, they can begin swirling and turning.
Swirling and turning. That sounds very fun.
The swirling and turning ritual, you know.
Of their cup, not of themselves.
Yeah, of the cup, yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, like, you could probably, like, whatever you need to do to set that
mood.
Some
dramatic flair. It's nice sometimes.
Set the vibe. If you got to swirl and twirl your bits, you go. Just
I might need to.
Set the vibe. Set the vibe. Now, this is one way. One way we can do this here. Again, readers all have different ways of doing things. This is one way I found. So swirling, turning, holding the cup in the left hand. Swirl it 3 times from left to right.
Very specific.
Very specific. Next, also with the left hand, don't switch hands. Leave it in your left hand.
One-handed tea swirling and twirling.
Mm-hmm. Left to right. And then slowly and carefully invert the cup over a saucer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Upside down. Just
upside
drop
down.
It on that plate.
Full blown on it. Leave it upside down for approximately a minute.
Okay.
And then rotate it 3 times. A lot of threes.
I love threes.
A lot of threes. That's why I picked 3. I love things in groups of 3s.
I know you do.
I love it. That's why we're doing 3 things today.
Yeah, that's great.
We have to do it. I was really upset that I couldn't find a 3rd one that started with a T. So.
Oh.
Yeah. Fuck me.
How about tenecromancy?
The palm. Palmistry.
To palm treading. It doesn't work.
Fuck.
It works in my brain for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The like in my brain, like the T in palmistry is like hitting hard. Like that T.
Palmistry.
Like palm tree. You know, yeah, it's coming in.
West side. Don't do that. Take that out.
Okay, there is no fucking way that's good.
I don't know why. I'm sorry. Who the fuck would say north side? Nobody says that. I've never heard anybody fucking say north side.
It's because we're north side. Like, no one's owning this. We're not scary. We're so friendly. We got a fucking room upgrade.
We did. We got a room upgrade because the front desk guy is real strong because he accidentally pulled the cap off a pin a little too hard and we felt awkward about it and didn't know what to say, but hey, you got a room upgrade.
Coco fucking saved the day, man. This guy did just like accidentally explode a pin right in front of us and it was so awkward. And she-
I was like, that cap was very strong.
I like almost said, like it was coming out of my mouth. Like,
She stopped herself.
I almost said, like, yeah, that's why I called you Pin Man in high school.
Nope, that is not.
Why would you say that to anybody? I hate that I thought of that. I didn't say it. Fuck.
I'm so glad you didn't say it, but you did smirk, and I
couldn't breathe. And anyways, long story short, they said they upgraded our room, and we don't think they did.
Yeah. Really know what the upgrade was.
We rotated it 3 times.
Okay.
Now we're going to flip the cup back upright. The hand is not specified in this. I'm going to say just keep it with the left.
You might as well.
Fuck it up.
Just one hand that
just
shit.
Just one hand that shit, unless they tell you otherwise. Pick the cup back up, position the handle due south.
Due south. So now you have to know directions. I never know directions.
I have
no idea where south is relevant to me right now. Nope. I don't know what direction I'm facing.
I shouldn't be doing that. Whoever's doing my reading needs to face it due south. I don't know where it is.
Oh, yeah.
I have no clue. If I am not actively watching the sun rise or set, I have no clue what direction.
No, or and my car tells me when I'm driving.
Oh, God, does your? Mine doesn't. I never know, Coco. I never fucking know what direction I'm going.
Yeah, I'm just out here directionless in so many ways.
So many ways. And even if I am watching the sunrise or set, I still don't know what way north or south is. It's not just up and down.
The sun.
It's not that simple.
It's not up and down.
And north is that
north
way.
North is up.
It's up. Consult your tea leaf reader for this
part. For directions.
Yep. They're going to know where to put that handle.
They'll probably tell you south does not mean down.
I'm going to say, hey, I'll tell you exactly where to put this handle.
Yeah.
Fucking assholes. Okay. So tea leaves should be stuck to the cup in a variety of different shapes, clusters, embedded with different insights and answers, you know, that's what you're looking at. You're looking at how these tea leaves settled into this cup.
The beautiful dark snowflake.
Yes, they're looking at it like, ooh, yes, I'm gonna tell this story right now.
But where did tassiography come from?
Yeah, where did it come from? Well, we don't know.
Maybe China again?
Fuck yeah. Maybe from China. Yes, it may come from China.
I bet it does because they drink a lot of tea in China.
Tea was first enjoyed as a beverage around 2700 BC in China.
That's a really fucking long time ago. It's like 5,000 years ago.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no, I think
that's math. Hard math.
Well,
no, that's hard math.
But you just go to zero and then you just add from there.
No, but that's like negative numbers, though, technically. I don't like that.
I don't know how it works.
I'm not good at it. Because if it's under zero, I get that like we're just counting backward, but it's negative. I'm not good at negative and positive.
Count the zero as a plus sign. So the 2,700 years before the zero plus the 2,024 years that came after the zero. So 4,724 years ago, tea was made in China. Don't ask me to do anything more complex than that. I can't. I don't. Somebody please tell me if I'm wrong. And
don't you dare tell her. She's did all of that with nothing.
I'm smart today.
You guys don't have any reason to believe us. I'm telling you, she just did that, like just looking out and looking at me somehow. She did all that. I don't know.
I think you're giving me too much credit.
That was so hard. Anyways, I don't even know how to gracefully recover from this, from all that math. So I'm just going to pop back in and say tea begins to show up in the written record in 350 AD. And I'm never, that's it. Ew. Numbers. Oh God, there's more. Fuck. Okay. Some of the earliest cups that could have been used for tea leaf reading may have come from the Ming Dynasty.
Okay.
We're in AD now. That makes it better. That makes it better for me. 1368 to 1644. It's a long dynasty.
That is a long dynasty. And that's like Henry VIII is happening during that time.
Oh, it so is. That's the earliest cups used for tea leaf reading.
Okay.
My God, what if Anne could have gone and got her tea leaf reading?
Oh, wow.
They would have said, run. Bitch, and she would have been like, I am. And he's following me.
Yeah. All the way back to Hebrew. She tried so hard. She did.
And sometimes you can't run. Oh my god, you know what's cute?
What is cute?
Because you've seen The Tudors.
Yeah, I love that show.
Fucking the Natalie Dormer scene with the cards. It's like the tarot cards.
Oh, you're right. It is like that.
Because that's like back in the general era.
Yes.
And when they had like the king and like the queen and everything.
Okay, that's a really fun little connection.
And then it had like her and like the A when like her head cut off. Oh my god.
Okay. I love it.
So these earliest cups, Ming Dynasty, these cups were known as Gaiwan. They were lidded, handleless, and flared cups, and they were made from light-colored porcelains.
Okay, they sound really fucking cute.
Very pretty, very pretty.
I actually love a good Chinese tea set with the cups without the handles. They feel very fun to hold.
Yeah. No, yes. It does.
They're
it
like adds, petite.
Yeah, and it feels like exotic.
Yeah, it does.
Like it feels like an experience, you know? Like it's not me with my mug and like my full fist around it, like gulping.
Right. This is like something like our ancestors.
Yes.
Collectively.
Right. It makes me like want to hold it with two hands.
Yeah.
And it like, you know.
Yeah.
Very demure.
Very demure. Very cutesy with that teacup.
For real. Over the centuries, tea plantations began to spring up in Japan, Indonesia, India, kind of more places just popping up.
Like, okay.
Popping up like daisies. Eventually, Dutch traders brought tea leaves to Europe in the 17th century, and they could have brought some tea lore with them. Like, ooh, they were bringing this back from their original places. You know, people were giving this to them. They were telling them how to use it. They were drinking it there. Like, maybe right, they could have brought this back. Maybe they sat in on a tea leaf reading kind of thing.
Oh,
but I heard, who knows?
Dutch guys get to England, roll up, and they're like, I saw the craziest shit go down in a tea house.
Yeah.
Let me show you what I watched them do. And then they made up their own tradition.
The oldest known English language book on tassiography was published in the 1700s. A lot of stuff going on in the 1700s. Tarot's going off.
But what a quick turnaround. Tea gets introduced, and in the same century, they're already writing down lore about it.
Yes.
They're like, this is how to do it. We're the masters now.
Do this shit. Tassiography. Here it is. Let us write a book about it.
Okay.
And it was called A Teacup Reading and Fortune Telling by Tea Leaves.
Oh, well, that takes some of the beautiful flair out of tassiography.
Tassiography, yeah. Yep.
Okay, that's much more fun to say than
Teacup Reading and Fortune Telling by Tea Leaves. Ugh, but in a Scottish ad, can you do Scottish?
Oh, I actually cannot.
Yeah, either. Not, I can't even try. I can't even try. To be completely honest, I cannot even try.
Accents are not my forte.
I'm usually willing to give it a shot, and I don't think I...
Scottish is too hard.
Yeah, no.
It's so beautiful as well. I don't want to butcher it.
That's the thing. I think that like my honest shot at it would sound disrespectful.
Yeah.
I think that's like how bad, how like, I can't do Scottish.
I can't do any of them.
Can I do like a word? I feel like, okay, I'm like channeling my Merida. It's just me, boo. Change your fate.
Oh, see, you're
fate.
Doing it.
Oh, yeah. Change your fate. Is that it?
Yeah.
I think it needs to be more. I see. I don't have like the confidence to commit to Scotland. Scotland's hard.
Okay. I have a trick for Irish.
Okay.
Okay. Say, I'm going to tell you four words and then I want you to say them quickly together. Yep.
What?
You're going to try it. Okay. It's whale. I'm already laughing too much.
I already forgot the first word.
Whale, like a whale in the water.
Yes.
Oil. Beef hooked. Well, oil be fucked.
No, cute. It's cute. Whale oil be fucked.
Well, oil be fucked. Well, oil be fucked.
Cute. See? Cute.
I can't do it.
That was Coco, not me. I can't do it. Mine still sounds really American.
Coco just disrespected her ancestors in so many ways.
Maybe that's where that came from. You got that. You, that was good. That came from inside you.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, oil be fucked.
Yeah,
wait,
but you gotta,
wait, what was hooked. I supposed to say?
Well,
was it hooked? I just straight up said fuck.
You just went straight to fuck. That's one thing about Maddie. Maddie's going to go straight to fuck.
So Teacup Reading and Fortune Telling by Tea Leaves was supposedly written by an unnamed Highland seer from Northern Scotland.
Oh, that's very fun.
Very mysterious.
Very mysterious.
Very mysterious. In this book, it talks about this very homey, rural setting in which fortune telling by a spae wife, where she would look at the form of leaves left behind in someone's cup of tea to tell their future.
Oh.
Now, in Scots language, the term for a fortune-telling woman is spae, spae wife.
Spae wife.
Spae comes from the Old Norse, spae, meaning prophecy.
Oh, that's a prophecy wife. Okay.
Yeah. Hi, sign me
up. Can I be one?
Yeah. Again, I'm thinking brave.
Yeah.
Like her out there in the woods. She's reading tea leaves.
The way that I want to just be in the woods alone and drink tea. Prophecy wife me up, somebody.
So these spae wives are sitting in the highlands. They're doing these tea leaf readings. But according to the book, what these women were doing readings on was pretty fucking mundane. They're just like, yep, I'm looking at your tea leaves and you're going to get a letter. It's coming.
Oh.
Or they'll be like, you said you were going to sell like what at market? Yep, the tea leaves said that you're going to get this much for it. They're not like going crazy. They're not out here.
There's not a lot of options in that time period to talk about. Like, it's not like you're going to marry Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Like,
there's one thing we know. No one is fucking telling
pastures.
You that you're going to marry Jonathan Taylor Thomas. So according to this book, these spae wives are pretty innocuous. You know, they're up there. They're safe. They're in their cottages. But the folklore of that region does kind of sometimes give them more of an edge. Again, think brave.
Okay.
Now, they're up there. There's a lot of tales in the Orkney Islands in the far north of Scotland. Then they're saying these spae wives were very wise and had these supernatural powers, right?
Okay, yeah.
But they were very good-natured, little eerie, little creepy. You don't want to piss them off.
Right.
But they're good-natured. You can think that little wood carving witch in brave, right? Like, she was just carving wood, but like, if you want to play, hey, Merida, you wanna change your fate? Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it.
As tea became more affordable and easier to get your hands on throughout Europe, doctors were recommending it to help with ailments. There's a lot of competitive pricing. It was getting pretty easy to get your hands on tea, right? For a fun little bit of fortune telling and a fun little thing to do after tea, right?
Yeah. There's not much to do.
Not a lot to do.
Farming, but in those winter months when you can't work the land, there's not much to do.
There's not much to do. And not everyone just has a fucking crystal ball, you know?
Right.
Or like these other, you know, other more mystical just things laying around.
Right. But people were just like us. They were curious about the world around them and their future, and they couldn't Google shit.
No. All throughout human history, people have just like wanted to know, right? Like, this curiosity, the mysticism.
And that's why we have things like this.
If there is a group of fucking people that love some mysticism and were real curious about it, it was the goddamn Victorians.
Oh, yep.
The Victorian era saw people on either side of the Atlantic just like getting all enthusiastic with spooky things, big ways, small ways, all over the place. The Victorians were all about it.
Yeah, like seance parties?
Oh, yeah. 1840s spiritualism, all about it.
Yeah.
Tea leaves. So if they weren't actively trying to like communicate with the dead, they're wearing like, you know, like memorial jewelry made from like dead loved ones' hair and like the post-mortem like photographs and stuff.
Oh,
you
the
know,
post-mortem
like,
photographs creep me the fuck out. Every time. Chances were you were going to lose several loved ones in your lifetime. So
going along with that, like, you are going to lose so many loved ones at this time. It was such a natural thing that like, this craze makes sense, you know, like having that comfort of their hair around you, or like, you know, like the hauntings, like, talk to me, you know,
and
like
the seance parties trying to, what was your last wish for me, or these things.
It was all like very extreme, very dramatic, you know, like over the top, and it was this kind of borderline obsession with like occultish type of stuff.
Well, back then, like, everybody was like, the Winchester House is from that time period, and like Harry Houdini was super into spiritualism.
Yep. God, all of that back then. And then at the same time, there's just this ongoing love of tea, you know, throughout Britain and, like, you know, coming over to the States and that kind of thing.
Yeah, if we don't throw it in the harbor first.
I'm going to say, if it makes it that far. But yeah, so it's no wonder that, you know, this kind of caught on and flourished, right? Yeah. Like all the pieces are there. Now, around the same time, the Victorian era, we're getting like really into tea leaf reading. The practice also became heavily associated with the Romani people.
Okay.
Now, this was an ethnic group that began to travel out from their original homelands in India sometime during the medieval period.
Okay.
And they lived a very nomadic lifestyle and they traveled all throughout the world. And in Europe, they gained a kind of complicated reputation, right? We all know where this story goes.
Okay, this like Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights.
Yep, that's where we're going here. A lot of people living in Europe at the time were wrongfully assuming that these people were just all these ruthless criminals, right? Because, oh my goodness, if anyone is new to us or different, like we're scared. Now, the Romani people throughout Europe kind of became linked with mysticism. And that could be like for a few different reasons here. That could be because, you know, they travel a lot. They were living like separate from these communities, right? Like they weren't setting down permanent residences. They were going to be passing through after a certain amount of time.
Like traveling villages.
Exactly. Also, again, there was a frequent effort to exile these people from the lands that they are passing through, right? For these reasons, it could have helped like kind of, you know, get people curious. Like, wait, like, who are these people?
Who
like
are these people?
The colors of what they're wearing and their music and their culture. They have like these tea leaf readings. And it heavily gets linked to Romani women traveling through like towns. Like people would go and seek out these Romani women to do these tea leaf readings or like have them come into their homes and do them. Like it became linked with them. People trusted their results. They were good at it. Like this was something that people sought from them.
That is so interesting. Evidence of that is still very heavily in our pop culture, like TVs and movies, or even when you go to a restaurant and like, or an arcade, and they have those fortune telling machines, and inside is like Madame Zara or whatever.
Yep. We're going to talk about that when we get into palmistry too.
Okay.
Because that's another, like they were very, like the Romani people were really big, like propelling that out, you know, to like a worldwide standard as well.
That's
like
so cool.
Yes, it is. It's like a cool thing to be known for. And everywhere has tea, you know, like these women are having like, I hate to say tea parties because it sounds so like juvenile, but like you're having your afternoon tea, like women all throughout history would like gather together.
That is
like
a social.
That is, yes. That is something that would be done. And then, I mean, gosh, it's already there, right?
It's already there. You might as well.
And again, it's one of those things where like, it starts off as like a fun little game, but if you're right about something enough,
it snowballs.
Mm-hmm. And like, again, there is so much that goes into like being a good reader of these things. There's so much intent and like so much like thoughtfulness and like meaningless and like being able to read people and like there's a lot that goes into it, and like it just became something that was like linked with this group of people, you know. Like we're saying, like tassiography is associated with women, whether it's the Romani women of the Victorian era, like women tea leaf readers, like that's your go-to.
That's what comes to mind.
Right. And like as that knowledge and the art of it all is passed down, it's passed down through the women in the household, you know. Like it's just, it makes sense, you know, like the on the domestic level and like again that social aspect of like women getting together, like for, you know,
right,
spilling it. In fact, a lot of people give credit to Catherine of Braganza for first making tea popular. She was the wife of Charles II, who reigned during the 17th century.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. A lot of credit goes to her there. And again, tea is becoming more popular, widely available, like to all different classes, and that's allowing women to get together and gather. And at a time when there weren't a ton of entrepreneurial opportunities for women, a lot of women were running tea rooms too.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like for the ladies. Like have your tea, get your tea reading. Like most tea leaf readers will tell you that you could use any old teacup. You got a teacup, put some tea in it, let's read your tea leaves, right?
Oh.
But the Victorians, Love some maximalism, which so
yes,
do I.
Yes, they do. I really, I do as well.
So for Victorians with enough interest in disposable income, they would have some specially designed teacups. And they mixed feelings about this because they would have like markings on these cups to make it like way easier.
Oh, so you can, it's like interpretation for dummies.
Pretty much, yeah. It has very clearly marked sections and symbols, you know, you could, the things land here, that means this kind of thing.
Okay.
And similar to tarot, some of these tea sets even came with like a full ass guidebook.
Oh, so okay.
Anyone can do it now,
anyone
right?
Anyone can do it. Those poor tea ladies with their tea rooms.
I was going to say, it's again, I stand by it with this too. And I am a person that has to read like my tarot readings. Like right. I have to use a book to read that. It, if the people that don't have to use it, you and, know.
Yeah, that's very cool.
I want the Romani woman reading my tea leaves. Like yeah, I want it out of the cup that she did. I want her cup.
Yeah,
I want like her to tell me what to do. Like right. That's just how I personally want it read. However, I don't know. I like it would be fun to have a teacup that if my tea stuff landed somewhere and it meant something, I'd be like, oh my god, I'm gonna have a good day. Like I, that's also my shit too. So
do we have to try it? Do we have to do a little tea reading?
I actually. So I. was going to bring loose leaf tea.
Oh, I have some. I'll bring it next time.
Oh my gosh.
And we'll just do a little follow up.
We'll do a little follow up tea leaf reading.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Beautiful, beautiful. So how you actually read the leaves, right? Again, like all of these things we're going to talk about today, it depends on your reader. But many start, it's got to be loose leaf tea.
Okay.
So
no tea bags.
No tea bags because it's going to get sludgy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to get sludgy. That's not what we're doing here. You also want to avoid teas that have like flowers or fruit because okay. That's going to like kind of distort the symbols here. We really, most tassiographers just really want those tea leaves pretty okay. much. A lot of them even break it down further and they're like tea leaves and water, no cream, no sugar. And again, I'm kind of there.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want cream and sugar in my tea leaf reading.
Okay.
I feel like I want fucking hot water and leaves.
It's just extra fluff.
Yeah, just give it to me.
Don't weigh my leaves down.
No, I like my mysticism raw.
Raw.
Raw and rough.
Raw. No comfort for Maddie.
Give it to me. Romani women.
Yeah.
That's an open invitation. When it comes to drinking the tea, it's pretty much always the querent who's doing the consumption. Makes sense.
Yes.
My reading, I'm drinking this tea. Again, you're not just drinking tea. You're asking a question. You're seeking some answer. Like you're opening your mind. Everything is set.
You're letting the universe know.
Yes.
What your query is.
You have to let the universe know where to meet you here, right?
Yeah.
You can't just go into
it. Universe is busy.
Universe has like a lot going on. Take a number, please.
Take a number.
So in some readings, tea leaves spotted near the top of the rim might represent events in the near future. Those deeper in the bowl might lie farther ahead.
Okay.
Others claim that you can divide the cup into halves. And one half being the short-term predictions, the other half for like more long-term
okay.
kind of goals. But really, again, like what you're seeing at the bottom of that cup, it's largely up to you. Like this is a lot of like self-reflection, meditation, you know, like
yeah.
way more than any definition in a book.
Personal like, interpretation.
You've got to work with it, you know,
yep.
like you've got to want this, like, or what's the point?
You have to interpret.
Yes. So throughout most of the history of tassiography, a lot of people may just call it a quaint little distraction that
yeah.
bored ladies sitting around a tea table are doing.
It's a tradition that's gone on several hundred years.
Oh my God. And it says a lot about a lot of the international trade and feminism, really, you
yeah,
know,
honestly.
Like, yeah, a lot of, you know, it sheds light on the Victorian love of all things spooky.
Oral traditions before it was written down, like that mother to daughter bonding and passing down traditions in your household. Yeah, there's a lot happening. There's layers.
So many layers. Speaking of layers, how many layers of your epidermis do you have?
7?
Okay, you know what's crazy is I also thought 7.
Is it not 7?
I have no clue. I thought you said layers and we're going to talk about palmistry now. Okay. And so I just went straight to epidermis.
I love a transition.
Oh my God, is it 7? Because for some reason I was like, I feel like it's 7, but why do I think that? There's no way that it's 7.
You know, historically, if I'm ever asked a math question I do not know the answer to, or a question that could be a number, I will say 7 every time, but also I do think it's 7.
God, but
I don't know.
Okay, there's 7 layers of your skin and the epidermis is the top one. So you have like the epidermis and the dermis and
yep.
all that. Is that it?
And then the other 5 that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Subcutaneous.
Ooh, that's correct.
Crustaceous, Jurassic.
It sounded good. It sounded good. I like chores. Where the Paleolithic level of my skin is where all the fucking fossils are.
It is.
That's where the bones are.
That's deep.
That works on 2 levels. Fuck. Let's talk about palmistry. So, God, even in the most ancient of ancient cave paintings, we see palm prints.
But we talked about that in one of our episodes, and I'm like, that's the art that I'd be making. It's a palm print in a cave wall.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. These palm prints are unique. Sometimes they're traced. Sometimes the hand is dipped in paint. Sometimes 2 crossed over. They're different. Sometimes they're kind of placed underneath pictures where some historians are like, could that be almost like a signature type of thing? They're unique. They're different. Now, palm reading, don't overthink it, is essentially using the lines of the palm to figure out a person's characteristics or future. It can also tell of past lives. Some palm readers will say the left hand represents your past and the right hand represents your present life. Again, okay. Different readers have their own way of doing it. But palm reading, also called palmistry or chiromancy, another mancy.
Chiromancy.
I fucking love a mancy.
I do.
Is the art of using palm lines and undulations of the palm to explore the future and characteristics of a person.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. The patterns in your hands can tell you about your life.
Mm-hmm. All of your lives.
All of your lives.
All of them. Wikipedia will tell you that it's the pseudoscientific practice of fortune telling through the studies of the palm. But it's really cool when you look at how this evolved through history and what it is today.
I can't wait.
It's really cool. So all throughout human history in the world, no matter what era of time you're in or where you are, the hand does show physical evidence of who a person is. It shows cleanliness. It gives clues to occupations, nervous habits.
That is so true.
Even like hobbies, right? Like a guitar player has those calluses.
Are you a cuticle picker or a nail biter? Mm-hmm. Are you a farmer with your potato fingers like my people?
You're a sweet little potato digger.
I have potato digger hands. That's my heritage.
I didn't know what that meant until she showed me the motion.
Yeah, my fat fingers were made for farming. Samwise Gamgee would wipe me up so hard with these potato digging hands.
Flowers in your hair.
Oh, just call me Rosie.
So palmists will look at your hands and focus on the certain specific lines and markings within them. So there's lines of health, wealth, and happiness.
Okay.
It's generally regarded as a good thing if the lines in your palm are deep, firm, and narrow.
Okay. As I'm examining my own palm.
I know. I almost don't even want to look at mine because it like grosses me out now. I'm like, oh God, it's ridgy. There's a lot of ridges. I want to look at it.
Oh no.
How did you just make a potato clutch?
My potato clutch.
I looked over and your hand was flat. And I looked over again and it was like you were holding
an invisible
potato. According to palmists, there's also different types of hands, mainly based on physical characteristics like length and width of fingers.
Yes,
right?
Very like, important in many aspects.
It's like for to say, digging a potato.
Or other things.
Also, I'm like looking at them now. I'm like very palmy. First of all, I have huge hands. They're huge. Huge. And it's
they're
like,
not fat or meaty.
Is they're all palm.
Yeah.
Like my palm is the size of my fucking face.
That's an exaggeration, but she does have larger palms.
My palms are gigantic.
Not in a weird way.
No, it is.
She's very proportionate and beautiful.
It's not. No, it's not. I have like these stupid teeny little twig wrists and like these giant palms.
Can you palm a basketball?
Yeah.
I can
just like straight stick it. I don't know if I can. I don't know.
Could.
Yeah. Between the sweatiness of my hands and the size of my fucking palm.
It's at least they're not hairy.
You know what? Here's a fun fact about me. For like, I don't know. I don't want to math. It's a lot of years through like middle school and high school, I played water polo.
Water polo.
Your bitch was so fucking good at it because, hi, I'm left-handed. And also my palm is gigantic. I could catch that thing at it. Like, I'm, my God.
This is amazing.
To this day, I can hurl a water polo ball at someone's
face. You are athletic. Yeah, no, you are water polo, archery.
Just palmy.
Just palmy.
I think I'm just palmy.
She's just palmy and her palms are balmy.
So they're big. What does that mean? Are you a palmist? What is there's like, oh God, you're a lot. This is too much. It's too much palm. Bitch, you got too much palm on your hand.
That is the hottest new insult.
Bitch,
you are palmy.
You got too much fucking palm attached to your wrist. What are you doing?
Oh my God.
Put your palm away.
Put your palm away.
It's gross. It's too much. Now, again, each palm reader, palmist, is going to have their own little spin on how they do a reading. However,
yes,
there are some things that are pretty fucking Bible with it. There's a few things. One of them is like the Mount of Venus, which signifies a person's energy levels. And that's pretty across the board. That is this. It's like that part at like the base of your thumb where like it kind of like raises up a bit there.
Oh.
There's an anatomical word for that for sure.
Of course there is.
The Mount of Venus. Yeah. That
indicates something.
Yeah. A person's energy levels.
A person's energy levels.
Yeah.
So I'm a sleepy bitch. What is
no,
is that
I think
match
that,
my hand?
No, yours looks, I have no clue how to read a poem, but yours looks energy. Yours looks high energy.
Do you know what I have?
What?
It is a palm reading kit, and I have just, somebody gave it to me, and I've never played with it, and I feel like I should bring that next time.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It is a whole little book that tells you all the things, and then it has all these cards, like little mini cards, and it's like, you match the pictures, looking for these lines, and then it shows examples, and then like the size and shape of your palm, and your fingers, and your nail beds, and like all these different things that it takes into consideration. I will bring it.
Oh my
God. And
we'll
just fucking play with it. It'll be fun.
Yeah, we need to, oh my God, on Patreon, we should do a follow-up episode and do a tea leaf reading.
Yes.
And a palm reading. We already have to, there's tarot cards in this room.
Right, yeah, now. Yeah. Obviously.
Like, what are we doing here?
Right.
And so, oh my gosh, we'll put it on Patreon.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Fucking fun, everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm going to walk you through several places that is associated with palm reading. And I think it's going to shock you how far this goes back because we started at cave paintings.
Yeah.
I'm going to count that. Was it full-blown palmistry? No.
But it's identifying.
It is. Yeah. There was a palm. There was palms there. There is pictures. You can see all of the horses. You can see things that were a part of their world. And then they have fucking palm prints all over the place.
Yep.
Right?
It's identifying.
There's something about that. But listen, here's what's up, is in Mesopotamia.
Oh, that's really old.
It's so old. Mesopotamia back then was just thriving between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. This area included
cradle of civilization.
Mm-hmm, the cradle. This included Sumerians, Akkadians, Babylonians, and Assyrians. And they were deeply spiritual people.
Okay.
Deeply spiritual people. They're also known for their advanced methods in math, astrology.
Right.
And palmistry.
Palmistry.
Crazy. Like in Mesopotamia. I can't. Now, the Mesopotamians thought that each line on their hand held a secret that could unlock your fortune.
Oh, I want to know what mine are.
No, I know. Each line was considered a direct line of communication with the gods, with the deities, with
okay.
everything out there. Every line is
dude,
like
Akhenaten would hate that.
Akhenaten would hate that. Akhenaten didn't have any palm lines. It was just one big flat
one
thing.
One big frisbee. One frisbee palm.
And he's
palm.
Like, well, it's clear. Now we know. Move to the fucking desert.
Move to the desert.
Yeah. Worship the sun.
Worship it.
Yep. And just fuck off. Sign XOXO.
Akhenaten. Love always Akhenaten.
They believe the palm encapsulated one's fate, personality, and potential. This was not a pastime. This is not something fun we're doing. This is not reading tea leaves because it's fun. This is not playing card games with family members. Like, no, palmistry. Like, this is fucking real.
It is assessing you and your value to the community.
Oh, God, yeah. This is high priests and priestesses who are considered, like, to be communicators between humans and gods are the ones reading your palms. This is not anyone off of the street. Like, this is people who are communicating with God.
Okay.
Can, like, look at your palm and be like, this is what they're trying to tell you. And this would guide people in their daily lives and major decision making. So like health, love, conflicts, career choices, palmistry, all of that.
Wow.
Like, tell me what to do. They actually had clay hands made back then with lines and symbols used in palmistry on them. Like, they were making these models.
Oh my gosh.
This is how significant this was.
Yeah,
society.
That's a big deal.
The land, like Mesopotamia, the land that invented writing.
Yeah.
You know, like.
And like farming.
Yes. Like palmistry. Cue it up to the Egyptians.
Okay.
Coco, just for you.
Love it. I love it. I love it.
Now the Egyptians like took this and like made it intricate. Like, this is a fucking system now. Like, how we're reading these palms.
As they do.
As they fucking do. They're making it math. Take it, make it math. This is reserved for pharaohs, high priests. This is for matters of state and spirituality, not your common person.
Oh.
Fuck you guys. This isn't for you.
Matters of state.
There's a bug on my tree.
No, how? Why? We got upgraded.
We did it. If I drink this bug, will you guys leave a fucking review? Now, again, Egypt has been known for their mysticism and very deep spiritual practices.
Right,
they
right.
love that. You know, they're all over. They're all over this shit. So they were using palmistry for healing practices as well as dealing with deities and that type of thing. Like we said in the Nefertiti episode, there is a god for everything.
Yes, everything.
Everything. And the lines in your hands are all, like in the Mesopotamian regions, direct messages from deities. All
that
different
is,
types.
God, that's such a cool belief.
That's such a cool belief. I'm like, through your hands.
Through your hands.
Like, that's so cool. It's not like the specks in your eye.
No,
you know?
It's your hands, and that you use your hands to connect with the world.
Yeah. Like, that's so beautiful.
It is.
Every hand is unique, and it holds a roadmap of their lives and their potential. Again, you'll see, like, across all these cultures, like, their potential is a big one. And I love that. It gives you insights into the past, prophecies of the future. And the Egyptians believed that hands were like a mirror into your soul. Like, it reflects your character, health, and in this case, your fate. And that's why this is not for the common man. This is fucking high stakes. This is technical important. Again, this is not, we're not having fun here. Like, no fucking joke. Like, pharaohs were seen as living gods on earth, and they are not immune to palmistry or like the ties of the lines in your hand to their destiny.
Wow.
Like, they're even like, hello, palm reader. Like, tell me what the gods are telling me. And they are one with God. You know, like,
gosh,
they are taking this
dude,
so seriously.
Akhenaten's palm reader was doing some drugs that day.
Akhenaten's palm reader was fucking Merlin.
Led him astray.
Like, yeah, Akhenaten's palmer is playing for the other team. So with the pharaohs, palmistry played a huge role again in their decision making and their rulership, really. Like, your palm's pretty much, it's telling you a lot that has to do with your rule. Palmistry made its way into their hieroglyphs. The line, again, high stakes. The lines on your hand were studied, respected. And its role in Egypt was more of a spiritual journey, this quest for wisdom, and, like, you know, all of it really is this pursuit of divine connection. Like, all of these things, like that curiosity, like you were saying earlier, it's just there.
It's still there for most of us.
Hey, speaking of curiosity, let's talk about the Greeks.
Are we gonna match their Greek?
We're gonna try. Okay. So, like many things, the Greeks adopted this practice and adapted it.
Right.
So, the scholarly Greeks are not just going to simply sit there and be like, what's this palm reading thing? You're going to read my palm? Cool, do it. They can't just be a passive recipient to a palm reading.
No.
No, 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 no.
You take a story and you build on it.
And for them, which this is interesting because I think that when I saw this, I was like, ugh. Greek communicating with the gods. Here we go. Not so much. Not so much with the Greeks. This was a lot more about they're trying to philosophize with it.
Well, of course they are.
In the face. We're philosophizing in the face. Like, this was a way to better understand oneself and just really dive into the mysteries of human nature. They love this shit back then. The mysteries of human nature. They're molding palmistry to fit their philosophies and their worldviews and that type of thing.
Except for Diogenes, who's molding his palm to fit his dick. That's all he was doing.
Diogenes nuts. Yeah, no one's ever seeing Diogenes' palm, and they don't want to.
Nobody wants to see it.
No one wants to see it.
It's not available for viewing.
One palm is on his thing. One palm's on a fucking chicken.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing. Oh, God. God bless Diogenes.
Talk about cross-contamination.
And all who encountered him. Go listen to that episode. What do you think of Diogenes?
That's a good episode.
So the lines on their hand were seen, again, as an indicator of a person's fate, their potential, but also a reflection of their character and their place in the cosmos.
Okay.
Right? They did get a little mythological with it, too.
Well.
They can't help themselves.
It's the Greek of it all.
The Greek of it all. So each part of their hand was associated with a different deity.
Right.
And so, for example, the four fingers were linked with the four elements.
Okay.
And the gods that ruled them. It weaved in a sense of the divine. However, it was still guiding you on the spiritual journey, but not so much like these are the deities speaking to me. This was a lot more like, let's reflect on this, you know, like I do love the fingers linked with the four elements though. I love shit like that.
This is my spring finger. This is my summer finger.
Okay, Coco took it seasonal, not elemental, but I love it. Yes,
this is my water finger. This is my fire finger.
No, I love your winter finger. What one's the winter finger? I love it.
It's probably your ring finger. I don't know why that's winter, but it is.
The middle finger has to be fire, right?
Yes.
It's got to be.
Yeah. Size. Definitely said elements, and I went seasons.
You took it seasonal, and hey, I liked it. I like your spring finger. You went in hot with spring finger.
I sure did.
God bless. The Romans also embraced this concept and...
Well, they did everything the Greeks did.
They did. And hey, they made it, you know, they made it their own philosophical thing.
Yeah.
They love that. Big philosophers at the time are writing all about this. This is big in the intellectual culture of the Roman Empire.
It's like a new scientific discovery.
Yeah. So there was a physician named Galen, and he believed that the lines on your hand could reveal your medical predisposition. So the Romans are taking it a little less fady, a little more medical. More visceral. And this is still echoed in a lot of forms of palmistry today, actually. But the Romans also saw it as a way to understand oneself and the world around them, explore those mysteries of existence.
Yeah.
Forge a path to enlightenment, all of that. The Romans are into it too. We're all into it. Now, India. India and palm reading for me have gone hand in hand for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah, that's fascinating.
So it's likely that the Indian practice of palm reading is even older than that of the ancient Greeks or even one seen in ancient Chinese texts as well.
Okay, I can believe that.
Oh yeah, the Vedas. The Vedas are a large body of religious texts that originated back in ancient India. This is one of the oldest religious texts out there.
Oh, cool.
And it's mentioned in palmistry.
Wow.
These books are written in Vedic Sanskrit. And the texts are, they're the oldest Sanskrit literature and the oldest scriptures of Hinduism out there.
Oh, shit.
And it mentions palmistry.
That's very cool.
God. In parts of the Vedas, monks at the time were advised to not read palms for money, right?
Okay, yeah.
And this is interesting because this is 2,000 years before Christ, right? And that's implying that, like, palmistry was a profession?
A profession popular enough you could charge for it.
Yeah, like, popular enough where they were telling their monks not to. Like, don't you be charging for that, right? Like, 2,000 years
before. It's already well established.
Yeah, right, before baby Jesus, people are out here reading palms. I love that. There was a lot of other, like, really key foundational texts of Hindu astrology that were detailing interpretations of every line in your hand. Like, okay. It was very, very big in Indian history. From India, it's likely that the practice spread out into China, though that one's a hot topic. Like, that one's conflicted. A lot of sources, I mean, they're just as old in each place.
Okay.
Right? So right. That one's kind of hard. But on that note, the fortune telling of the Romani people, which included palm reading, began in northern India. Now, Indian astrologers first gained knowledge of signs that were later used in palm reading, right? They're gaining this knowledge from the stars.
Oh.
And they loved this because knowing about life challenges and stuff ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
like if you had your palm read, you could like work through that. Like you could change yourself or the events before they happened. Like that was part of like the karma element of it, right?
Right.
Again, the Romani people who originated from that northern India region had such a key part in elevating this art throughout the centuries.
Okay.
Like we really can thank them for it. They inspired a lot of other cultures to study this as they traveled out from like the northern Indian Punjab region. I'm so sorry if I'm saying that wrong. They entered Europe between like the 9th and 10th centuries and like this kind of just spread throughout it. And again, much like the tea reading and that right. type of thing, the Romani women were sought out for this. A lot of Romani historians will say that, I mean, palm reading kind of equaled survival in a lot of ways. You could do this anywhere. You could practice this anywhere. It was a good way to make a living if you had the skill passed down to you and you knew how to do it. You know,
oh,
everyone
right.
has a palm.
Yeah.
Like, and again, like people will seek you out if you are good at this
mm-hmm.
and like are intentional with it and like, you know what you're doing. Now, this is kind of ironic here. So palm reading was very popular in the Middle Ages.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Those dicks.
I know. Not in the way that you may be thinking. Witch hunters were seeking out palm readers.
Okay.
To help them.
God, the hypocrisy.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Certain markings on your hand is, say, proof of a satanic pact or
God.
Whatever the fuck. Like, if you had a fucking mole in the wrong place on your hand.
Yeah, I'd be fucked.
You're a witch. Yeah, like, you're a fucking witch. Fucking witch.
I don't have, like, mole hands, but I have some weird freckles on my arms.
Yeah, that is. I think you might be okay. I don't have on. No, I do. I do. What the fuck is that?
There's a little freckle.
On my giant fucking palm. How you're, out of place. They'd be like, you're a fucking witch, you're a witch. Palm reading would allow the witch hunters to like look for signs of witches and like hunt them down.
God.
So interesting.
It is interesting.
If you're an employed witch, it's fine. Which I guess, I mean, like reading palms doesn't make you a witch. I realized I titled this episode Basic Witch 101.
Yeah.
Obviously, the implication is not if you practice these things, you are a witch by any means. It's just, you know, occulty, spooky season kind
yeah.
of thing. Now, palm reading in the Renaissance remained very popular, even though the rulers didn't already love it. You know who didn't love it? It?
The Borgias?
Well, probably not. Actually, you know, honestly, who knows? I would not be shocked.
Oh, did Henry not love it?
Henry fucking hated it. He fucking hated it. He had like a whole statute. And like according to that, it called the art, quote, a crafty means to deceive people.
And you know what? That makes sense to me just because especially Henry was paranoid about anything that talks about his own death. And not that you use these practices to predict death, but it could go along that line
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because, oh, there's a lot of interesting parallels.
There is a lot of interesting parallels. It's also interesting, like, I wonder, it just, the source that I found on this said the 1530s, but I wonder when. Was that, like, before or after the astrologer visit with Anne Henry? But by the 1650s, Europe was overrun by, quote, pseudosciences. There was books on palmistry popping up all over the place. And by that point, scholars had been like, let's, like, make this science. Like, let's just take it. Make it science.
Let's make it science.
Let's make it a real fucking practice here, you know?
So it's consistent.
Yeah, well, this isn't magic. It's science. It's science. We can take it seriously. Enter chirology. This began to replace palm reading, though they're the same thing. They're the same picture. It's the same thing. This was just a scientific name given to palm reading to, like, rationalize this.
Okay if you call it science.
None of that mysticism stuff. This is fucking science. And it was at this time that chirology burst on the scene in that terminology, that male scientists began to push female fortune tellers out of their own profession.
Of course they did.
They sure did. In fact, who is considered the first modern palmist is a man named Paracelsus.
Of course it's a man. It's even a man. Though women had been doing it and had perfected it and were just getting along just fine for centuries, the first person to get credit for it is a dude.
He used information on the palm for both self-knowledge and the diagnosing of disease.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I will say again, I want the Romani woman. I want the Romani woman, though.
Yeah, she knows her shit.
She knows her shit. In the early 20th century, an American doctor, William Benham, brought palmistry into the modern age. And that's the guy. If you look up, like, the most famous palmist out there, William Benham is the guy. It's a dude.
An American dude?
No, I know. Wow. I fucking hate that. In the early 20th century. I'm sorry, William Benham. Maybe you're cool. I don't know. We'll look into you sometime. But what I'm saying here, my conclusion of this is, like, support female palmists. We need to take back the art of palmistry, ladies. American guy from, like, the fucking 1900s. Like, where do you get off, William?
It's already 4,000 years old at this point, but he's the father of it.
I don't love it.
God, you can take credit for anything if you have a big enough dick.
I guess you can.
Palmistry.
Palmistry, and that's palmistry.
Claim it.
Palmistry. Claim it. Love it. There is a little overview of three little spooky, occulty things.
Yeah. Okay, I love this. Cool. This was really interesting.
Ah, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I know. I did a little spooky bit. And now it's time for a fresh cup. We'll read the tea leaves of them after. Do pop over to Patreon, though. We'll do one. We'll do a tarot pool. We'll do a tea leaf read, and we'll do a palm thing. Let's do it. Why the fuck not?
Oh, we got to.
Yay. And if you liked this episode, leave us a review. We ain't too proud to beg. 5 stars, please. And stay tuned for a fresh cup. Okay, bye. And now it's time for a fresh cup.
I'm here for it.
A fresh cup in which we get to decide if this guy is the asshole and if he broke bro code.
Bro code.
I know. I feel like if you have to ask, you probably broke bro code.
It could go two ways, because you could be the asshole for not breaking it, but you could also be the asshole for keeping it.
Complicated question.
It depends on what you're bro coding about.
That's the thing. Who are your bros and what are their code? Let's find out. I invited two friends over the weekend to my place. We went out to a bar where a girl approached us.
Okay.
I wonder why he, like, had to preface it that, like, he invited them over to his place first and then they went to the bar.
Maybe it's, like, setting up, like, they're all staying at his house or something. I don't know.
Oh, probably. Who knows? Maybe I, like, should not just read the first sentence.
Oh, I could just be overanalyzing it, too.
We all chatted with her, but one of friends, I'm assuming that was supposed to be my friends, but one of friends, let's call him Bob, flirted a lot more with her and got her Instagram.
My have times changed. Her Instagram.
Weekend ended and they all went back. Okay.
This guy does not like words.
He does not like words.
This is why say more words when less words do trick. Fine.
To be clear, it wasn't relevant that they all met at his house first and then went out.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't. I mean, like, now they all left.
He's just setting the scene.
Yep. Weekend ended, then they went back. The girl had mentioned that she lived close by, so I thought I should shoot my shot. Got her Instagram from my buddy Bob's Instagram followers list and sent her a message, which she's been receptive to when we went on a date.
You did do a lot of steps.
Bob states I broke bro code and is really upset. Is it fair for him to be upset? Am I the asshole in this situation?
You're the asshole on a few levels, actually. Number one, the reason you're an asshole is because she's not a possession. So you don't get to decide between the two of you which bro gets to code her. Second.
Good job, code. Way to come in and speak for the lady. I'm over here and I'm just like, no, you fucking broke bro code.
You did, though. That wasn't cool to do to your friend.
No, like, what the fuck?
You knew they were vibing. Like, you had to stalk his list.
He said it right there. Yeah, you had to stalk his list. You couldn't even ask him.
That was dishonest. Bob's friend.
The other bros in the comments are like, dude, yeah, you suck. This guy said, do you frequently sneak around behind someone's back to get what you want? I'm like putting myself back in like the dating days. And fresh if this out. Happened to me, you know, I would be like, oh yeah, that seems pretty fucking shady, Bob. This person, another bro. It's a bro named Calvin. I guess it's Reddit, so we don't fucking know. Who knows? But it says, no, I agree with Bob. You should have at least asked him what his intentions were with her and if it were cool for you to shoot your shot since she lives close to you. Nothing wrong with asking, but he would have at least appreciated it. Like, girls come and go and your friends are for life.
This is not a new exploration. This is a topic that has been discussed and decided. There are universal norms.
Yeah.
If you want to date somebody that is talking to in the talking stage with your good friend, you gotta ask your friend or just find a different
Say, like, just maybe, like, don't. I feel like, I don't know,
it's a,
like,
one horse town, Maddie.
It's, I guess
there ain't enough in this town for the both
for
of us.
For the both of us. And when it's your fucking soulmate, you've gotta go through your friend's followers and find her and message her. What was even the message? It's the fact that, like, they hit it off so well that night. You know?
No, you're right. What is the message? Hey, remember that guy that you really hit it off with the other night? I'm his friend that you didn't give a fuck about.
Yeah.
And I am just inserting myself here.
I mean, God, I guess, like, all they did was, like, flirt. Kambod flirted a lot more with her and got, I don't know.
I just still think that common courtesy.
It's something that, like, you probably shouldn't have to spell out.
He's the asshole.
Yeah. And, like, if breaking bro code means being a kind of shady fucking friend, then yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You broke bro code.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
M is amazing.
You came in very hot with China. It was very aggressive.
Why did I do that? Why did he call me the pin man in high school? Angus!
I almost shot Red Bull out my nose.
That would have sucked so bad.